The following is a Mediocre Movie Club production.
Welcome back to the Mediocre Movie Club podcast. We are here tonight to discuss our latest trio of movies. Our theme was women in men's worlds, and we watched Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, The Silence of the Lambs, and Big Eyes. I'm John Kissel, and with me tonight is Shane Settner.
Yo!
It's just us two tonight. Yeah. We are missing our fellow ambulator, Brian, who has taken to running, so he's not allowed in our group anymore.
Yeah.
Although we'll reevaluate in time for the next run
podcast.
He's
sauntering, too. Just flagrantly in our faces.
There's a lot of words for walking or, moving at a regular pace. We chose ambulating for a very specific reason, namely that a convicted pedophile used it in a TV show.
That's right.
It's very set speed with a very set manner.
When we're not taking vocabulary suggestions from convicted pedophiles, we are just a couple of white dudes from the middle class talking about women in a men's world.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to discuss this once we get to the unified threads, but it's appropriate because all three of these movies were written and directed by men. So it all works out. So our first movie, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot from 2016, starring Tina Fey, directed by Glenn Ficarra and John Requa, who are makers of mid-budget films for adults like Crazy Stupid Love and Focus. And with Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, they adapted a book by Kim Barker, who is a war reporter like the protagonist of Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. That book was called The Taliban Shuffle. And similar to the movie, it is about her years-long stint reporting on the Afghanistan war. Tina Fey's presence immediately implies that this movie is a comedy. And while Whiskey Tango Foxtrot has some laughs based on the absurdity of its situation and the considerable talents of Tina Fey, this isn't so much a laugh-out-loud comedy as much as it is like a light movie, and therefore you could call it like a dramedy, I suppose, if you had to nail it down. It's closer to like a professional revelation, personal fulfillment story than a war story, although we do see some aggressive combat in the film and some aggressive carnage. Combat largely takes place in the background. Shane, how did you feel about the integration of Tina Fey's character, Kim Barker, discovering her calling against the backdrop of a country and a populace stuck in decade four of war in their country?
I like this movie way more than I thought I was going to. Like we mentioned comedy, yeah, the Tina Fey thing, but also this is marketed as something funny, and like, who wants to go see something slapsticky about such a serious topic? And I think they treated the topic seriously with this movie, but the marketing department did not treat this topic seriously.
There were a lot of movies in a similar vein coming out, not necessarily in 2016, but 2015 had Rock the Casbah with Bill Murray.
Right.
Again, about the Afghanistan war. I think that was about his – I haven't seen that movie. I think it was about his character starting an American Idol equivalent in Afghanistan, which a documentary was made off of, the show itself, not about the American guy who came and started the program itself, if those two incidents are related. And then Our Brand is Crisis, also a movie that I did see with Sandra Bullock, in which he's like a political operative in Bolivia during a presidential election there. And much like Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, I assume Rock the Casbah and Our Brand is Crisis also foreground the American protagonists against just stuff that is a lot more interesting happening in the background. Like the various anecdotes and conflicts that arise over the course of Kim Barker's time in Afghanistan are resolved like the same day. Like everything's fine. Everybody's happy. There aren't really any problems. She doesn't cause any problems. She doesn't make any really big decisions. There aren't these like big moral muddles that it not necessarily would make the movie less funny, but it does, I think, make the movie too simple. Like its goals are very limited.
Yeah, I would agree with that, but I never fully felt like the movie is about breaking down what's going on over there, rather than just like this is one woman's experience in her career and finding herself in what is actually a fucked up situation. And
could be any fucked up situation.
Yeah,
it doesn't have to be Afghanistan.
I think it goes to like how quickly conditioned humans can get. We get to fucked up situations, right? Like to
sure.
To
provided you have the safety of the green zone equivalent and
sure.
And plentiful access to drugs of all kinds.
Yeah, like but it's like a lot of careers where people just kind of end up, you know, if you're an attorney, you start to see, and you work the insurance defense, you see every single person is faking it on the other side, right? Sure. Or if you're playing attorney, you see that every single on the defense side is just
always about the law.
So, well, it's my personal experience, but like, you know, or if, you know, like, or if you're a doctor who works in the ER, you start to resent somebody, or you start to see this stinks into your worldview.
Sure, like gallows humor.
Right.
Was there enough of that? I don't know that there was any of it, really.
I mean,
that's what I expected. Like, I recently watched a movie called A Perfect Day, which is about aid workers, specifically Benicio del Toro and Tim Robbins and the rest of their team during the Yugoslav wars. And it's just over the course of 24 hours, and it's fairly hacky and over earnest. And the dialogue is, and the relationships between the characters are not great. It's not a great movie. But in comparison to Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, like, as we're going through this day, there's no right answer to a scenario after another impossible scenario. Whereas, you know, like, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot takes place over the course of years. And what are the big conflicts in this movie?
I mean, I feel like it's losing a bit of, like, losing your morality, losing yourself towards your career. It's treating people as people rather than as vehicles for you to get your next break. Like, it felt
fair. I mean, soldier who gets blown up, that's fair and accurate.
I felt like this movie respected Afghani citizens, and I would have liked to have seen more of them.
Yes.
But
it's worth pointing out that the Afghani character who gets the most screen time is played by a dude named Christopher Abbott, who was born on the East Coast.
Was he really?
Yes.
I mean, and that was a character you want to see probably.
And I thought it was well portrayed. It was a good character. I thought he was a very good truth teller who stuck around exactly as long as he needed to.
Yeah.
No more. But again, he played Marnie's boyfriend on Girls. So not necessarily.
I must have missed that
Afghan
episode.
Heritage, yeah.
I know. You don't want me to talk about Megan Levy again.
Oh, well, whatever.
No one
it's
wants
relevant.
To hear me say like 40 f bombs in like
taking place about the same time.
Like, that movie didn't treat anyone there other than the Americans as people. It treated the dogs better than it treated anyone they were there fighting for or fighting with, alongside or against. Even if you're fighting against someone in war, they're still human beings. And I just felt like this movie treated people like humans for the most part.
For the most part.
But it was also about people losing their humanity and stopping treating people like humans.
There is that early scene where Kim Baker is out for drinks with Margot Robbie's character and another female journalist who is like from the region. And she's telling the story about why she's there, and it's about just realizing the stasis in her life based on all the time she clocked on a treadmill. And like, that's an absurd, like, that, speaking of Girls, like, that's a story that you would hear on Girls. I came to a place where people are dying daily because I didn't feel like my comfortable life was going anywhere.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily think the movie, like, justifiably makes fun of her in that moment. Like, and we don't know why Margot Robbie is there. She could be there for any number of reasons, but the movie gives Tina Fey a monologue to that effect, and then it laughs at her. So I kind of thought at that point, it's pretty early in the movie by then, that the scope would expand and it would leave behind her career ambitions. But that is largely where the film ends. Like, she's just a better reporter. She's on the Sunday morning news shows now. Everything's great for her. Afghanistan war goes on for 10 more years.
Right.
With no end in sight.
Right, right. Yeah. I don't know. This isn't a perfect movie, but it's better than I expected.
Totally fine. Totally fine.
Yeah.
Moving away from the protagonist and what the movie is trying to communicate, this is a pretty deep cast. White guy.
Yeah.
Playing an Afghani dude, you know, notwithstanding. Of the many supporting characters, which one did you want to see more of? I'm thinking of Billy Bob Thornton in particular.
Yeah.
He's just awesome as an authority figure.
Yes.
He's so dismissive of really everyone, but still projects an air of confidence and competence.
He just does such a good job with not even having to say what he's thinking or what he's the emotions, right?
Sure.
Like he is such a still a shit to Tina Fey's character.
I think, but I don't think it comes from a place of malice. I think he's just got a lot going on.
Right. I just think it's his personality. But you watch him watch her go out and get those pictures and that the first time she goes out with them, and obviously he respects her, but he also is not going to let her know, right?
Doesn't he congratulate her after? Doesn't he say, give her a compliment?
I think it was probably something
which
pretty
I
dry.
Don't know that he would if he is on patrol and a journalist is killed. I mean, he's in a lot of trouble for that.
Probably.
So I feel like maybe that scene shouldn't have been her way into respect, but the opposite.
Yeah. The character I want to see more of was her driver. I'd like to have seen something from him outside of in Tina Fey's presence.
Yes, he talks about his family, but I don't think we ever... Well, we are at his wedding, right? Yeah, we're at his wedding. Yeah. We're at his wedding when she tells a story about the treadmill.
Yeah.
But again, it is very much in the background.
Yeah.
The purpose of that scene is for her to tell that story, not to celebrate the driver's wedding.
Right, yeah. And I would like to see, like, what is his... I think it'd be an interesting question, which is probably too much of a movie, really, at that point. But to see, like, how do people respond to him as being someone who drives around American journalists?
Sure, yes. What kind of danger does that put him and his family in? That kind of thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. What's his family thinking?
The stakes are very high. The stakes are very high for the people surrounding.
Much higher for him than it is for Kim Baker.
Yes. Last thing about Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, and in relation to our theme for this round, Martin Freeman's character of Ian, when they're first hooking up, he does the Aziz Ansari claw move, which came out in the where he sticks fingers in his romantic paramour's throat, and she, like, it's a laugh moment in the movie.
Yeah.
She, like, swats him away. I, like, don't do that. That's stupid.
Yeah.
Why would you do that? I don't know. It struck a chord. It just happened to be watching this about the same time as that was happening.
What chord did it strike? Were you displeased? Were you offended?
I'm not offended, certainly, but, like, that's just a weird thing to do. Like, who's that for? It's not. Is it for him? It's certainly not for her.
I feel like
that move has gone horribly wrong for whoever would do it before, especially if, like, a person has, like, as they are in that scene in the movie, if a person has been drinking all night and someone stuck a couple fingers down their throat, like, what's gonna happen? It's just it's a silly thing to do.
I mean, I did yell at my 3-year-old for doing the same thing to me last night.
Yeah, well,
he hadn't been drinking though,
different context
that I know of.
So yes, Martin Freeman, and perhaps by extension Aziz Ansari, the emotional intelligence of a 3-year-old in that
moment. Right.
Like, maybe people don't want that. Maybe people don't want that.
I thought that was, I mean, I don't know if you've read any, like, Tina Fey's, like, I read.
Memoir.
Which Boston one? Pants. Yeah. You read that?
I haven't.
I think that, like, that scene right there, it had her, I feel like it has her fingerprints on it, because she's pretty honest about the stupid thing guys do and the awkward romantic situation
she's
in.
That was a big part of 30 Rock as well. Liz Lemon's general disgust with sex.
Yeah.
It's a character, obviously, but it comes from somewhere.
Yeah, and I feel like that's where that came from, so I wasn't even offended by it. Just like,
oh, no, yeah, not offended.
Like I said,
it's just a question of connection.
Okay.
It's a Family Guy reference in a movie that was made before that reference was out in the ether. I just recognized something in a movie. So another movie that contains a lot of men doing stuff to women that they probably are not big fans of is Silence of the Lambs. Jonathan Demme's 1991 Oscar-anointed adaptation of Thomas Harris's novel is best remembered, probably. I would say the vast majority of people, when they think of Silence of the Lambs, they think of Hannibal Lecter, the cannibal serial killer played by Anthony Hopkins. But despite his Best Actor win, he's only on screen for 14 minutes of an 118-minute movie. This is a film that belongs to FBI agent in training Clary Starling. Jonathan Demme, at this point in his career, established director, and if you had to put, like, a specific directorial trick on him, he loves the full face close-up. Just the frame is the actor's face. That's it. And then switching back and forth in conversation. He does that a whole bunch in here. And I feel like the point of that is to teach the viewer to pay attention to eyes, especially eyes that are following Starling, as she is someone who is very often the only woman in the room. Demme is often catching people looking at her with anything behind those eyes, from curiosity to outright malice. And of course, like, the big climax of this movie, it unfolds in first person as the serial killer, played by Ted Levine as Buffalo Bill, and the third iconic character in a pretty iconic movie, as Buffalo Bill stalks her through his dungeon with night vision goggles. Again, we're seeing eyes on Starling. So The instigating incident of this film is arguably Starling getting jizz flung in her face. So I feel like this is a very appropriate movie for our current moment.
You would, wouldn't you, son of a bitch? I was just waiting
for
that.
Sure. Classic throwback to season one of the Mediocre Movie Club, in which we reviewed Manhunter, a movie that is excellent in certain parts and hot garbage in others, specifically the performance of William Peterson, who was heavily rewarded in the bad section of our mediocrities for that year, whenever that fucking was. We're in season five now, so I don't know, do the math. So yeah, sexual harassment in Silence of the Lambs. It's not overt from her coworkers, but I think it's certainly something that's present in this movie, far more than I remembered.
Yeah, I regret not having had the chance to rewatch this recently. So it's been a while. Like, I've watched this so many times on cable TV. I don't remember the jizz throwing incident.
Sure. The first time I saw this movie would have been on a late night Fox TV. We had just the handful of channels growing up, and this would air then. And despite it being after midnight, you still can't show jizz on network television. Or, say, a man disemboweled and strung up on top of a jail cell, or another man pulling a mask made of someone's face off of himself.
Those are always on there. I remember all those. I do not remember.
The first time I watched Silence of the Lambs, and this was in my review, and I realized that I had seen this movie several times because it played heavily on the late-night rotation of Fox at that in 2001, 2002. And when I realized that I had missed that scene where Lecter so dramatically pulls the cop's face off of himself and then murders the paramedics, it adds another layer to this movie. And the jizz would have been included in that. I don't know. They'd probably just cut it. I don't know. It wouldn't be that hard of an edit, I suppose, for a censor. Like Miggs just says, I cut my wrist, look at the blood, and then wrist flick. I don't know what they would have shown.
What do you think when they try to not take the jizz out? Do you think someone's like, hey, guys, too much?
It's very important. Starling is going to go back to Jack Crawford and say, I couldn't get anything out of Lecter. He's going to say, oh, well, you tried. Back to the obstacle course. That's the end of the movie. If Miggs doesn't throw the jizz in her face, then we don't get all the other good stuff in Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, like, when Fox first tried to put it on with the jizz, was there, like, some guy who's like,
too much?
Guys, we can't. I know it's late night, Fox, but we gotta have less jizz.
Maybe they colored it so it looks like spit, perhaps. I don't have a good sense of it. I would imagine we've all seen Die Hard on cable TV when it's like Yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon, or Big Lebowski. God damn it, this is what happens when you... Oh, it's something so ridiculous.
A friend, a stranger.
It's not even that. It's not even something simple like that. I can't remember exactly what it is.
Who do you think has that job? Do you think it's a Mormon?
Conan O'Brien, when his talk show moved from network to cable, he interviewed the censor in one of his extra segments. And it's just a dude, just a guy.
He's got to be Mormon. Do you think, like, when they're like, they get like a radar movie, they're like, some TV suit's like, get the Mormon!
I think they must have good humor about it.
He's in khaki pants.
The censor showed up in the South Park documentary, 6 Days to Air. It's discussions about how much shit is too much shit. And, I mean, South Park did a whole episode about this. Like, when can you say shit and when you can't say shit? So, I don't know. Someone's thinking about it. Someone's thinking about how much jizz is too much jizz. Clary Starling would say any amount of jizz is far too much jizz.
It has to be a married Mormon at that point. Because if it was an unmarried Mormon, it'd be like, okay, what did you throw at her? I don't get it.
Would not know. Magic underwears take care of all that stuff.
I'm glad we've now alienated another.
So what is it about Hopkins Lecter that remains so resonant even 27 years later?
Honestly, I think part of it, this sounds ridiculous, but part of it is from The Cable Guy.
Having not seen The Cable Guy.
You've never seen The Cable Guy. No. So in The Cable Guy, Jim Carrey puts a bunch of... They're at medieval times, and he puts a bunch of chicken skin on his face and says, hello, Clarice.
Right, that sounds pretty funny.
Which is not something that actually happened in the movie, but everyone, you say...
It's tying two things together.
Right, but if you said...
To be somewhat unsettled.
To someone our age, especially, if you said, name one quote from... from Silence of the Lambs, people would say, "Hello, Clarice," from okay. that shit right there.
Sure, and the performance is so big and theatrical that it invites parody. And every time yes. you parody something, you're introducing a new audience to it.
Yeah, Jim Carrey.
I've never actually seen Citizen Kane, but I've seen every Simpsons episode, so I've seen 75% of Citizen Kane.
Obviously, it's people are into this, and like there's a reason you noted he's only there for 14 minutes, because that's like a fact that blows everyone's mind, because he completely owns those 14 minutes.
Yes, and he does get that whole escape sequence that has nothing to do with either the case. I mean, he's there because of the case, but Starling is nowhere to be seen, and it's got nothing to do directly with Buffalo Bill, and he's not dealing with anyone from the FBI either. He's taking out local policemen, wherever they are. I don't even remember. In one of many exceptional sequences.
Jodie Foster is so great in this movie.
Yeah.
And to be bigger than Foster's character in this is...
She's not big in the same way that Lecter is.
Right.
But she's also not a straight woman just reacting to people.
Right.
Like, she's very much making things happen in this movie. So her antagonist, Buffalo Bill... He got some PC pushback at the time and continuously since then. As like the demonization of a trans individual, like him being a psychopath is an outgrowth of his sexual orientation. I mean, Lecter hand waves that away with a line, but does that occur to you at all when watching Silence of the Lambs? Like, here's a big weird gay dude.
Well, what is Lecter? How is he waving it away?
He says that he might think he's trans, but he is in fact not. He's just he's so self-hating that he wants to be what he considers the opposite of who he is. He's not actually, you know, a man trapped in a woman's body. He's a man that would like to be in any other body, male, female, whatever.
Right. I don't think this. I guess I don't buy it. I mean,
sure. If we're talking about 30 Rock and we're talking about Tina Fey, I've used this line on the podcast before, where in Tracy Jordan, the character on 30 Rock, talks about how racism is dead. He's a black guy because you now see black guys as robbers in a home security system commercials or something to that effect. Like, once it becomes okay to cast minorities as nefarious individuals, then we've come full circle.
Okay. I don't know. Like,
but in 1991, there's no way that was the case.
No, but at the same time, I think it's there's a pretty clear pattern of people with, like, serial killers have some fucked up sexual issues.
Sure.
Right? I mean, I guess we could have portrayed him as Ed Gein or Gein.
I think that.
Where he's fucking his mother's head. I mean,
he's a composite of three serial killers, and I do think that was one of them. Like, so, Ted Bundy and maybe him and a third guy.
So, I mean, of the serial killers we're working off of, they all have some sort of... And like, now it sounds like I'm saying, like, being trans is bad. It's not. Because the guy was wearing people's skin. Like, someone who is a trans individual isn't trying to wear someone else's skin to be a woman. There's, like, a man.
I think it's a very surface reading of the movie. I do think it gives itself an out, and I think it's more of a question. I don't think it's the movie's fault. I think it's more the culture's fault, if it's even a problem in the first place. You have to have the goodbye horses scene. You have to have a guy who thinks he's being awesome for the camera in his woman suit. You have to have him tuck his dick on camera, like he's not going to cut that out later. Just totally de-puff this very, very self-important thing that he's doing, and then go back to it. That's a great scene. I wouldn't trade it.
That's actually the most memorable line of the movie is the, "Would you fuck me? I'd fuck me."
I prefer, "Was she a great big fat person?"
That's very good too. That's very good too.
He's an incredible villain.
Yes.
Very different from Lecter, but... The movie is not lessened in any way by having two crazy, over-the-top serial killers competing for who could be the bonkerest character in this movie. So if we jump forward some amount of time in Starling's life, putting aside Hannibal, does Jodie Foster and Clary Starling essentially become like the same person? Like Jodie Foster, who, for all intents and purposes, she actually came out, but she just wouldn't talk about her sexuality for a very long time.
Yeah.
Because she is in a male-dominated industry.
Right.
And I can imagine Starling doing like the exact same thing if like her life went on for another 30 years. Of course, Thomas Harris's sequel to Silence of the Lambs ends with her and Lecter running away together, with her being under like some kind of mind control. Here nor there. That's not a great. That's not a great right. book. The converse of that proposal is that the bug guy with the bad teeth, who she takes to her graduation ceremony, like this could be the beginning of, you know, they're gonna have like 3 or 4 kids and she's going to be like a desk job FBI agent, and she's going to have a wonderful life with that weirdo.
I will say real life Jodie Foster is a big fuck you to any celebrity who's ever been like, man, the paparazzi just doesn't know when to quit, because you don't know shit about Jodie Foster.
Yeah,
because she doesn't want you to. Continues to do the work she wants to do, I assume.
I mean, this was probably her heyday. I think her heyday likely ended with Contact, maybe Panic Room. Panic Room's 2001,
yeah, probably
I
Panic
think.
Room, yeah.
She's directed a few movies since then that I haven't really liked. The Beaver with Mel Gibson.
Don't remember that one.
Okay, fair enough. I think he still had more shitty things to do. Wasn't at his nadir, Mel Gibson, but he's a very depressed person who gets through his depression by talking through a beaver puppet.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that. Yeah.
Okay. The Brave One, I didn't like that one. It was like a vigilante. On the streets, Taken kind of thing, Taken before Taken, and then Money Monster from a couple years ago, another movie that just a totally didactic financial type thing. I would say either Silence of the Lambs is almost certainly the best thing she's ever done. Taxi Driver, I think, is in the mix, and I haven't seen like a lot of her other 90s stuff, like Nell and The Accused and Maverick, which are probably also in the discussion.
Listen, we'll talk about Maverick anytime you want to talk about Maverick. I've watched that movie probably 50 times.
Okay.
Inexcusable on my part.
Yeah, I don't have a good
it's totally fine.
Probably
it's
fine.
A totally fine movie.
Probably a lot of sarsaparillas
it's
being
fine.
Drunk. I don't know.
It's totally fine.
People cheating the cards. Is that what that movie's about?
I'm
super glad that her and Mel Gibson are really able to bond on the set of Maverick. And she would eventually become the only person sticking up for him after a certain point.
Yeah.
So our last movie was Big Eyes.
Okay.
This is another adaptation of a real woman's life, much like Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. Directed by Tim Burton, Big Eyes chronicles the years of painting Margaret Keane did while her husband Walter took all the credit. Amy Adams plays Margaret, and she plays her as very mousy and completely in Walter's shadow for like 80-85% of the movie. For his part, Walter, played by Christoph Waltz, starts off as manipulative at worst before turning into like an abusive demon. I'm the most negative on this movie of the three. Margaret doesn't fully get the viewer's sympathy until Walter is about to burn her and her daughter alive, in my view. What is it about either the character of Margaret or Adam's performance that makes Margaret so difficult to latch onto, if you even accept my premise in the first place?
It's hard to say. Like, I don't necessarily agree, because maybe this is effective part of the movie making. Like, she's clearly a victim here, but she also goes along with it. And I guess that in a way that kind of challenges, like, what's your natural inclination? Like, say, like, hey, don't go along with this asshole. It's so transparent, but what else was she going to do?
The movie gives her an out at the bar when she's talking with the Italian guy, and he asks both of them with no idea what the answer is. Total coin flip in his mind. Who painted this? And she just doesn't say. That's all. And then someone has to say something.
And I feel like
I wrote that it's just easier to not be on the side, because Walter is a bad person, obviously, and unworthy of admiration in any regard. But as far as caring more, I suppose, about a character who's doing something versus a character who's doing nothing, like activity versus inactivity, no matter what the activity is.
Yeah.
And Margaret is doing nothing. She is painting all of these, but we're going to talk further down about the actual value of all these paintings.
Yeah, can't wait.
Okay. I think a big thing with Margaret, too, is that she gets into numerology. Which immediately turns me against her.
Yeah.
I don't care what's happening to her.
Yeah, that's hard. That's hard.
I don't know if the real Margaret is like that. I don't especially care. I'm sure the real Margaret cooks dinner on occasion, but that wasn't in the film either.
No, I looked this up. I'm pretty sure she wasn't in numerology. Like, big. big.
But it has nothing to do. It's just eccentricity.
But
stupid, waste of time, utterly pointless, nonsensical numerology. Of all the things. Of all the things.
This just shows you how powerless she really feels over everything, though, right? Like, she has no, like, no
It just comes
power.
Up in that one. We don't see her beautiful mind style sketching her numbers out on a blackboard.
Yeah.
She just brings it up to like, some poor bastard like who was maybe interested in her new style.
Like the meme where the woman has, like, all the numbers over her head and stuff, and she's like, your mind's blown? No, none of that.
Nothing.
You know what I'm talking about?
That no
meme?
Idea.
You know what I'm talking about, that meme?
No idea.
Oh,
I'm
my
behind
God.
On my memes.
You gotta work on that. You gotta work on that. It's classic. Like, it's a good one.
Classic meme.
Classic meme.
It'll last forever.
I bet above...
This is the true
I
art
bet
of value.
Above average fan Dave will probably send you one of those.
All right,
appreciate
can't
that.
Wait. Fantastic.
Thanks,
I
Dave.
Eagerly await it.
Yeah.
Like, but there's nothing like it. It's just shown to demonstrate what an off-putting individual she is.
Yeah, I just feel like she's someone who feels powerless, and like her latching onto numerology, her latching onto the Mormons, or they
Jehovah's Witnesses.
There we go. All nice people. Her latching onto them so quickly, just kind of shows like she's just a woman who has no idea how to embrace her own individuality and her own power. Like, she's obviously a talented person. Like, and nothing.
Is she a talented person?
People liked it.
The movie, I don't think, takes a side. I think it maybe leans toward yes, with its opening quote from Andy Warhol about if they weren't any good, people wouldn't like them so much. But then Transformers movies exist in the world. Are these paintings any good? Are they not good because of mass production? Because they're available everywhere? Is the market flooded? And therefore, they become chintzy? And if there were less of them, would they be better? If she was painting everyone by hand and only existed in the one spot in the gallery, would it be better? I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know. They're probably not good. I think the movie does like the critic character just because he seems very in control of his
very
thought vocabulary.
Very sassy.
Appropriately so, I think, in the face of Walter's
so sassy
pomposity. And if it didn't like him, it would have let him be stabbed with a fork by Walter. But instead, he's a ninja who can just, like, catch a descending arm with no effort on his part.
That was, I did like that.
I enjoyed that. I think Terrence Stamp is probably like that in real life. Unstabbable by forks.
You know, when I was I was in second grade, I think.
Okay.
My cousin got really mad at me and stabbed me with a fork right in my forehead.
Wow.
And I told my aunt that, and she's like,
no penetration?
Nothing.
Nothing?
No. Oh, with my fork? Cousin, I'm not from Kentucky. Oh, with a fork.
Oh, dear.
Oh. Well, now I'm embarrassed.
You know, I can't really say the name. I can't say the word penetration around my middle school boys team because they're dumb children who take it too seriously. When it's like a perfect basketball term, you penetrate a zone.
Yeah. Yeah. No penetration. No, it just dented my forehead.
Okay.
And my aunt was totally fine. I was like,
worse.
Hey.
There's nothing important behind your forehead.
Hey, Marty just stabbed me in the head with a fork.
Marty.
She's like, yeah, Marty. She's not listening to this.
Mm.
It's fine.
What did Marty go on to do?
She is a hairdresser
now.
Oh,
she. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
In South Bend.
How many scissors has she stabbed into people's brain cages?
Unknown.
All right. She seems like a stabber.
I could be the only person she's ever stabbed. Unclear.
Okay.
So
there are piles of bodies somewhere who would like to be added to this list.
So
are the paintings any good?
I don't know.
Does it even matter, I
Here,
suppose?
I was latching on the sassy thing because I have some disdain for professional
Careful
critics.
With your – oh, shit.
So – And I think
it's a good thing we make no money from this.
That's right. Like, so, which is why I think it's funny that I'm even saying it, because here we are criticizing something. But I think there's value in people liking shit. So when it becomes just mass produced, maybe that shows it's too easy.
I've got mass produced paintings in my bedroom.
Well, no. I mean, yeah. But like, okay, it's like not mass produced. Like, there's copies of Starry Night, but like. Mass produced, like, you can make 40 fucking Transformer movies and they're all the goddamn same.
Yeah, and people
right?
like those.
And they do like those, but if it's just repetition. That's not as impressive as,
well,
boom.
We see that every painting is the same.
Right. So, originally, I think what she does is probably, at some point, creative and original. And so you have to respect the first but you don't have to respect the rest. Does that make sense?
I mean, she doesn't even have a good reason why she is painting what she's painting. Like, she says something dumb and banal and useless, like, I just think the soul gets through the eyes. Whereas Walter makes up a better story about starving World War II German orphans and just the sunken sallowness of their faces making their eyes look bigger than they were and being haunted by it. That's a better story than just some bullshit.
Better story, but that is bullshit.
It's a thing, but it has an air of plausibility at least.
But like, how do you you have someone who obviously has issues with her emotions? And you're like, I need you to express what you're drawing right here perfectly.
Here's something else that bugs me about their relationship.
Sure.
Is that if you go on Shark Tank with a good idea and you just mumble some shit out about the number 7, no matter what the contraption is, they're not gonna buy it. Some aspect of bringing your idea to market, no matter what the market is, art or machinery or whatever the fuck, is about capacity and salesmanship and the ability to turn an idea, which is worth nothing, into something that is worth something. And Walter is able to do that. She is not. Probably Walter was abusive in real life. I wish the movie was just grayer. I don't know how exactly you would do that when a character is essentially forcing his wife to paint a bunch of pictures and he takes all the credit for it.
But she also got wealthy off of it.
Sure.
So so how bad? Yeah. No,
she's just so pathetic that the movie, I could be very frustrated with her, but I think the movie clearly wants you to just pity this woman at every step she takes. For some period of time, it is a partnership. She does need him.
Yeah. So what does it say? I mean, again, what does that say about art, I don't know, for some reason, I just start thinking of Mozart movie.
Mm-hmm.
Where there's just someone who's inferior.
Mm-hmm.
Not that he necessarily...
that's a fine example in the sense that, especially in comparison to Big Eyes, because Amadeus clearly communicates both in the character's reactions to him and the actual output that you hear on the score, that Mozart is better than Salieri in every way. Whereas this movie is non-committal about whether the art is any good or not.
Yeah.
And deserves all this rigmarole about it. Just people are sentimental?
Saps. Is it good?
Taken advantage of by sharp marketing. So I don't know. I'm kind of talking myself up on this movie a little bit. I think what I keep coming back to is that she gets to take Amy Adams takes the picture with Margaret Keane at the end. Great, she paints every day the same fucking thing over and over again. I mean, at Jason Schwartzman's bullshit gallery with the fucking postmodern nonsense that is just ink blots, those guys aren't just coming in, I painted a new ink blot, put it up on your wall. There's a sales technique that goes along with it.
Ugh.
They have to convince people that it's worth something. Ugh. And that is the harder work than actually painting that bullshit.
Maybe that's why I find some sympathy here, because I reject that postmodern art bullshit for the most part.
Sure.
And what the value of that is.
Sure.
Putting a square next to a circle.
In contrast to that, yes. But surely there's a middle ground between what she's doing.
Are the waifs the Trump supporters? The people like the waifs, the Trump supporters, they're rejecting the liberal postmodern art,
yes.
And that's all they want to do is say
bad.
Fuck you.
You, Terrence Stamp, say this is bad, therefore it's good. Maybe. I don't know. If we had to smoosh metaphor off
of
this movie.
Let's just, how many more metaphors?
So, the courtroom scene, Shane. What's the takeaway? Always represent yourself. Lawyers are overrated at best.
Yes, I think that's the obvious takeaway.
Okay.
No, I mean, the courtroom scene, it was actually not so bad, but it was not accurate. It's not accurate.
It wouldn't shock me at all if they were just doing a transcript, I think. I've never seen Walter Keane speak in real life, but I don't know.
I would imagine there's some things he said that were similar to that.
Yes, he probably did try and do the Matlock bit of interrogating himself and standing up in front of and behind
that
the
That does
box.
Seem like something someone would want to do.
Sure.
I do love the scene where, the best part of it was, people confusing who do you represent as an attorney, the company or the person. And there's, we talk about this ethically all the time. So when the lawyers who were on his side originally when they were dismissed and they walked out. I'm like, that was great. That was great. Not enough people would know that. So nice touch on that. But I mean, for the most part, not remotely accurate.
Okay.
So,
are there not enough painting contests in the modern justice system?
I mean, I don't think that happened. It didn't happen, did it?
It did. It did happen. Yeah.
That's crazy. Good on that judge. Yeah.
Broaden that standard.
It's so different. I mean, court is different now too, but that's interesting. If that is transcripts, that's fantastic. Good for that judge for just saying, fuck it, let's do this.
So uniting threads on these three movies, as previously mentioned, the closest these films get to major female input behind the camera as far as like writing and directing is the source novel for Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. Are these films hurt by missing firsthand experience of things like sexual harassment or being frozen out of a boys' club, or do they more or less get it right without it? When I say get it right, I mean, I don't know what that is like, obviously. But
yeah, I don't know.
Sure, yeah. I guess, I think especially in the case of Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, it is missing some level of specificity that this actually happened to a person. Maybe the thing with the Burkut women who are telling her to not fix the well, I guess there's something there. But again, that all happens through Kim Baker's experience. And we don't even see their faces when they take their burkas off. We see her face. So I don't know. I guess this question, like, we have no sense of it.
I forgot your question already.
More female input would have made these movies truer, is the premise. At the same time, it's not that a person can't write about something they haven't directly experienced and not get it really right, because I do think Silence of the Lambs does very effectively put you in the position of Starling with all of the first-person stuff, with several scenes, like at the beginning when she's entering the elevator after leaving the obstacle course, and she is surrounded by much taller, because Jodie Foster is very short in real life, much taller men in an elevator in red shirts, and she's standing right in the middle, and she can only look at the door, and everyone's looking down at her. And then at the funeral home later in the movie, when she just finds herself in a circle surrounded by male West Virginian cops, and I think it's in West Virginia, and the camera just does a slow pan around as they're all looking at her. And like that, I think that they're not looking at Jack Crawford, they're looking at her. And like, I think that something like that is not in Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, where Kim is made to feel the odd woman out. And I think that's like the greatest contribution as far as these three movies are concerned, and the empathy of what's it like to be the only woman in the room.
Yeah, I don't really feel like it with Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, but I also think it's because Tina Fey is such a, I don't know, powerful actor, powerful person. Like, she takes, like,
She rips those fingers out of her mouth when
I don't know, like, I think it's because of Tina Fey's portrayal that kind of, I don't really feel like she's just a lonely woman in a man's world. It just feels like she is just someone floating around in life.
Yeah. I think it's not in that movie at all, really.
Yeah.
Like, men's world meaning war. Like, that's becoming less and less true as more militaries integrate, but the perception that war is men's province is the only women in men's worlds aspect in Whiskey Tango Foxtrot.
Yeah.
And yes, I would agree. It's just not in there.
Yeah.
So last thing, Silence of the Lambs, again, just packed with great scenes after great scenes. It starts with Starling alone on the obstacle course, running through the woods. Just no one else around her. She's by herself. And the implication is that hoary old chestnut, that she has to work twice as hard to get just as far. I don't know. Is it just that simple? Or is, you know, I'm sure the world is littered with people that worked very hard and just weren't able to break through despite their work. They didn't put enough time in on the golf course. They just didn't know the right people. I think Whiskey Tango Foxtrot and Silence of the Lambs as well both rely on their protagonists just being so good at their jobs that they're elevated. I don't know, maybe a little idealistic, perhaps.
And
maybe the alternative is just not something that anyone wants to see in a wide release movie.
I don't know. I feel like the thing
off the top of my head, I can't really think of an example of a movie where a character works hard and does everything right and is still thwarted at the end.
Because I don't think that's reality. Like, there are people, the privilege that we have as a couple of white dudes is we saw our parents work hard. And they told us we need to work hard. That's how you succeed. And, I mean, here we are, like, podcasting in the middle of Atlanta. So what did we succeed in? I don't know.
I guess.
But we're comfortable. We're fine. We're relatively happy, right? So, like, but the lesson to say, yeah, you have to work hard. You have to show up to work every day. Like, not everyone gets that lesson. I think that's showing people working hard is what it does. You're going to be successful if you continue to work hard.
Modeling, you mean? Whether it's in fiction or in real life.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, not being a model necessarily. If you're ugly, it's hard. There's nothing you can do.
It's exactly.
It's a shallow business.
It's a boys club in its own way.
Sure. I mean, yeah. So, I mean, hey, chicks don't want to see a bunch of uggos out there too, okay?
Sure.
All right? They prefer to be called chicks as well. So, but, like, I don't know. Like, that part doesn't bother me, showing them working hard. And if they do have to work twice as hard, okay, that's a fucking lesson. Like, if I had a daughter, I would probably say you are going to have to work twice as hard. Being in the legal profession, I do think women attorneys do have to work harder, and they have to be more serious, and they have to be meaner oftentimes to get respect from their colleagues. I've seen how their colleagues react.
That's interesting.
It's not something I don't enjoy being around that, the way some of my male colleagues react to female attorneys, but so that's why I completely respect, like, where you may have to work twice as hard, but as long as you work hard, you're going to be fine. I think. I don't know. Maybe not every time, but not
sure,
everyone.
And
but not
there's...
everyone is fucking going to succeed every time. I'm on my third goddamn career. So, like, I didn't feel like I failed my other careers, but I didn't go to the top. Like, I'm not fucking...
Whatever that is.
Evansville for, president being honored by the state government today, or where the fuck it is.
You organized the shit out of that basketball league.
Ah, thank you.
When you incorporated a D league.
Yeah.
Whew, revolutionary.
Yeah. So, do we want to talk about basketball now?
I mean, it came up somewhat organically.
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, you just want to throw it out there? You want to throw it out?
I mean, I ended the season with a 2-1 advantage over the Purple Unicorns. Beat the green team in the tournament, only to fall short in the championship.
Yeah.
To the gray whatevers. I don't know. Take it too seriousers. It was a tough loss, but, you know.
You guys came
at
back.
At least we got there.
You came back in the finals, too.
We got,
you're
we
down
got
by,
within a reasonable amount.
You were down
amount,
by more than 20.
Yes, we were.
20 and made it a competitive game in the fourth quarter.
Got within 9 and just couldn't convert on our offensive possessions, and the other team pulled away. I think we ended up losing by 12 or 14.
Yeah, I think it's 14.
But the important win is the win that got us there,
yeah,
against the green team.
God damn it.
Not a victory I'm proud of, if we're going to talk about this, just because there is a mass absence on the green team's part. Only 5 players out of 9 showed up. It was a fine 9. It was a fine 5.
I feel like I didn't have 3 of my best 4 players.
Yeah, fair.
But, you know what?
And it was a difficult game.
It went to the kids that cared about it more.
Your
kids showed
up.
True. Showing up is important.
It could just be the vagaries of whatever their schedule was like that day.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if some of my
kids
were
frustrating. I feel like if I mean, obviously, we won by 6 or 7. If you had more players there, your better players there, I feel like that makes a difference.
I think you won by 4, I thought.
I don't know. It was more than, I don't know, it could be 7.
It could be, no, it was 6. It was 6.
Okay.
It was 6.
It was more than one possession, certainly.
Yeah, because I told my kids not to foul at the end, it was 6. So, yeah, your kids cared more.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
They showed up.
Yeah, I mean...
My kids
just because I don't
literally
feel bad,
didn't show
just because
up.
I don't feel good about the win doesn't mean I'm going to give it back.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm still going to take it. I mean, there was a long-range 3-pointer that should not have happened, but I'm not walking over to the ref and saying,
take
you should take those
off.
Points away
yeah.
from us.
Yeah.
No one ever does that.
I do appreciate you saying that, though.
No, it shouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
But for something, yeah. Something to that effect.
Yeah. Well, shit. At least I could hang my hat on another high school championship.
Well,
that's
yeah,
all I
that's
got.
Something.
4 out of 6 years.
It's impressive.
Thank
it's
you.
Impressive.
I told assistant coach Pierce tonight that we were the Patriots.
He's been a guest on the meeting when
he was
a podcast before.
Yes. I told him that we were the Patriots of the Glen League, and he did not like that.
At which point, he chucked the trophy out of a second-story gym window.
Yeah.
He'll be paying for those repairs to that car for some time now, but I feel like his anger was worth it, just because that's quite a claim. So that's our most recent trio, Women and Men's Worlds. Our next trio is going to be documentaries about the internet. We're going to start with, lo and behold, Reveries of the Connected World, our first entry in the Media Community Club from Werner Herzog, the famed German director. And I cannot wait to hear his beautiful Teutonic voice drone out a bunch of high nonsense about some tiny corner of the internet. And we're also going to be watching Nobody Speak about the Hulk Hogan sex tape and the downfall of Deadspin. Is that what that was? Deadspin?
No. That was
something. No. It's dead. Whatever it is, it's I keep dead. Thinking it's dead.
Dead. Not
shut Deadspin. Down. Whatever it is.
I'm interested because I very much have the opposing view of my fellow liberals on this one.
This will be interesting. So. And finally, Audrey and Daisy, which is a documentary on Netflix. All these on Netflix. But that is a Netflix-produced documentary about, I want to say, like an online bullying case that kind of spiraled out of control. All documentaries, all should be interesting, and we hope that you join us. Check us out on the internet at MuticaMovie.club. Like us on Facebook, Munich Movie Club. Follow us on Twitter at MuticaMovieCal. iTunes reviews help us reach more people. And if you click on our Amazon link and shop as normal, we get a small kickback, and that allows us to continue providing this excellent content like we are right now. We'll be back potentially in the next week or so with another episode of our Rome recap.
Surprisingly less jizz-fleeing.
Yes. A lot more penises on walls, but the jizz there is represented as whatever they were drawing with instead of the actual substance
charcoal
itself.
Maybe.
Thank you for joining me tonight, Shane.
Thanks, John.
Have a good night.